Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Americans' faith in government is not very high. Our trust in government is near historic lows. Around a quarter of Americans, this is amazing, say they have hardly any confidence that their votes will be counted correctly. That's according to an Associated Press survey that was conducted this year. And then we have Donald Trump saying that he believes that the elections are going to be rigged, and he went beyond that. And so we thought we would talk about the faith that we have in our election process and what his comments might be, that even before we have cast our votes, the Republican nominee is ready to challenge the presidential results. Our guest this hour is Professor Daniel Takagi. He's a professor of constitutional law at Ohio State University, where he teaches courses on election law, constitutional law, federal courts, civil procedure, and legislation. His scholarship addresses questions of voting rights, racial justice, free speech, and the role of courts in American democracy. Here is what Donald Trump said, and then we'll get rolling with the hour.
Really, I hope the Republicans get out there and watch very closely, because I think we're going to win this election. But if it's rigged, like anything else, look, it was rigged, I thought, a little bit for me, and we won in landslides. I think it was rigged against superdelegates nonsense.
Absolutely. Well, we know it was rigged.
The guy never had a chance. And I'm telling you, November 8th, we better be careful, because that election's going to be rigged. And I hope the Republicans are watching closely, or it's going to be taken away from us.
Professor Daniel Takagi is our guest, and we're going to welcome phone calls for him. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Do you worry about rigged elections? Do you worry about the November 8th presidential election being rigged? What do you think about Donald Trump saying that he's worried about that? And, of course, he went on later to say to the Washington Post that he thinks the rigging will take the form of voter identification fraud, which is the kind of fraud that voter ID laws have been intended to counter, and we've done many shows on this, and there's not a whole lot of evidence that that's the case. So we'll ask Professor Takagi to talk about that as well. Hi, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Have you heard anybody else in recent history talk about the possibility of a rigged election before the presidential election?
Sure, we have. In fact, John McCain famously or infamously mentioned just this very sort of thing back in 2008 at one of the presidential debates, saying that Acorn is on the
right,
is the verge of perpetrating perhaps the greatest fraud in history, which struck many people, myself included, as wildly implausible, just as Trump's recent comments have.
Mm-hmm. Roger Stone went on, his advisor, former advisor, I'm not sure what he is right now, but he has talked about this quite a bit, too, and has written pieces saying, well, we have evidence of a computer hacker showed CBS how to vote multiple times. This does come up every presidential year, some form of this. You get this device. He said, to be very clear, both parties have engaged in this skullduggery. The party in power in each state has custody of the machines and control of the programming.
Yeah, I think here it's important to separate two very different things. One is what we actually do see in elections, which is the parties trying to adopt voting rules, including voting laws, that are favorable to their side. So, for example, we've seen Republican legislatures trying to adopt laws that make it more difficult to vote in various ways, restricting voter registration, restricting the hours for early voting, voter ID laws, of course. And then on the other side, Democrats have the opposite tendency, not entirely necessarily for the highest of motivations, but because they, too, want to win elections. On the other hand, you have these allegations that the election is rigged or it's about to be stolen. And yes, we have seen these kinds of allegations made by those on both the right and the left in the last, 16 or so years since Bush versus Gore. And I do think that these sorts of allegations about rigged elections are, by and large, implausible, or at the very least, highly overstated, and they probably do have an effect of diminishing public trust in the institutions of our democracy, which is already at a pretty low level. And I think it's worth considering why that is and why so many people appear to be ready to believe these implausible, if not fantastic, stories about election rigging.
Well, that's a good question. Why do so many people believe that?
So, you know, I do think it is the case that a lot of people, and again, people on both the right and the left, feel like they've been left behind. We obviously are seeing this with Trump voters, a lot of whom, certainly in my state of Ohio and many others, are from parts of the country that have been bleeding jobs, not just for years, but for decades, people who see their children's futures as not as bright as their own. And, of course, we see this in many other communities as well for young people around the country, including a lot of the people who flocked to the Bernie Sanders campaigns. The job prospects are bleak for minority communities, of course. That is, at least in some instances, though not always, the case. So I do think that there's a sense that government has stopped working for the people, and then at least among many people, that it's working very well for the elite. And indeed, we do see this expansion in inequality, which has been very well documented over the past four decades. We've seen real income stagnating, even as the gross domestic product continues to increase. So I do think there may be some very good reasons for the loss of confidence in government, but rigged elections aren't at the top of my list of what's wrong, at least not in the sense that Trump seems to mean that.
Maybe he said more than this, but I do know that he told the Washington Post that rigging is going to take the form of voter identification fraud.
Yeah.
People are going to talk vote over and over and over again. Although study after study has shown that just doesn't exist in large numbers anywhere in the country.
Yeah, it's often not entirely clear that Mr. Trump himself knows what he means by certain statements, and this is a great example. It was very vague when he first made the remark what exactly he was talking about by election rigging. Later he said something about voter ID rules, which seemed to play to some people on the Republican Party's fear about voting fraud. But, you know, this is really just crazy talk. The incidence of people going to the polling place, pretending to be someone they're not, the only kind of fraud that a voter ID requirement could plausibly prevent, this is microscopically small. In fact, even the more responsible proponents of voter identification rules acknowledge that that is the case. So the idea that somehow lax voter ID rules would lead to widespread fraud, it doesn't stand up to even the most fleeting look at the actual facts. Mm.
You talk about people like Trump and others fueling this distrust that we have in our elections, and we're reminded of what happened. Talk about a contested election was the year 2000, the Bush v. Gore, where the Supreme Court essentially gave Bush the presidency, and yet Al Gore gave, he said he was very upset with the decision and didn't agree with it, but democracy has to go on, and he conceded, even though that had gone on and on and on and on. And it's a whole different manner of handling a situation, isn't it?
Well, that's right, and it does seem to me there's some, I guess you'd call it preemptive CYA going on here on the part of Mr. Trump, with the polls showing him down. Maybe he's trying to give himself an excuse in the event that he does lose, as most people right now anticipate. But it does contrast quite markedly with the way in which defeat has been handled, not just over the years since the 2000 election, but throughout our country's history, where, you know, the expectation is that the loser will concede defeat and will give a speech at the end of the day that tries to bring the country together, as, you know, Mitt Romney did in 2012, as John McCain ultimately did in 2008 as well. And I do think that this is important, right? It's important that after elections we come together with a sense of national unity. But it's becoming more and more difficult given the pronounced polarization that we see, not only among our elected officials, but among the electorate.
Do you imagine, I believe he's also called for people to monitor his supporters the election. Do you imagine we're going to see a lot of people, and I'm not sure in what capacity they would do this, show up to be observers? Will there be a lot of observers from both parties at polling places?
There usually are, and having observers isn't a bad thing, right? It's actually a good thing. We want to make sure that elections are conducted in a fair way. On the other hand, there's a line that shouldn't be crossed, and at some point, observation may become intimidation. And we have indeed seen this from time to time in U.S. politics. There's still a consent decree in place that restricts the Republican National Committee from engaging in certain forms of conduct that have been deemed in the past to be a form of voter intimidation. But, you know, it can be sometimes a thin line. So observation is good, but intimidation is a bad thing.
Do you think we need something like UN monitors, the kind of places Jimmy Carter has gone, to have people at our polling places all over the country, monitors?
I think it's a great thing to have international observation of elections, and we do to some extent have this. We shouldn't think that we're somehow superior to the rest of the world and that the rest of the world needs election monitors, but for some reason we don't. I think observation of this nature is a good thing, and indeed there are people from other countries every election year who come to the United States to observe. The permissibility of their observed and what exactly they're allowed to do varies from state to state because different states have different rules about these things. But no, I think it's absolutely true that international election observation is a good thing, and we will see some of that this year as we do in every election.
Is there a method of voting, would you say, that might give us more faith in our system? Should we go back to paper ballots?
No. In fact, most people still do use paper ballots.
Do they?
In the United States right now. Ballots that are counted by machine, but we live in a democracy where we vote so often on so many things. Hand-counted paper ballots is not a viable option. It would take a really long time, and moreover, people make mistakes probably more than machines do. So outside of a few small New England towns, we don't see hand-counted paper ballots, and I don't think too many people who study elections closely think this would be a good idea. Look, the root of the lack of confidence that many people have in our democracy has ultimately very little to do with the machines that we use for voting or even with the rules. It has to do with some deeper structural factors, and that is, I think, what sadly Donald Trump is playing into with this talk about a rigged election.
Mm-hmm. You know, in his first, well, he came to fame with his TV shows, I guess, but his first claim to political fame was this whole let's contribute to lack of confidence in the duly elected president because
right.
He wasn't born in America.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I don't think that's an accident, right? We've seen him now for a few years playing on this inclination to disbelieve.
Mm-hmm.
And that came up very much in his becoming one of the, if not the most prominent, birther. I do think you're right to make that connection, which I honestly hadn't thought of before. There's definitely a relationship between this election rigging talk that we've seen from Trump and his comments regarding Barack Obama, which ultimately led him into the presidential race. He realized there was something to be tapped into here, this pervasive lack of confidence in our institutions of government, and at least on the right, and our president in particular.
The other thing that I've always found amazing, and tell me what it is about the American psyche, are we not reading anymore? Why are we so prone to believe? Because a huge number of people believed Donald Trump when he said the president wasn't, and they still believe that he wasn't born here. I don't know how this gains resonance.
Well, I guess I sort of find that rather easy to understand. It's not that we're not reading anymore. It's that we're reading and more broadly consuming information in a very different way from how we did 30 or 20 or even 10 years ago, right? So much of our information is coming in 140 character chunks, and moreover, liberals and conservatives are consuming very different kinds of news. So if you're in an echo chamber on either side, of course, you're not hearing much of the other side, and a lot of the information that passes for journalism is not as reliable as it was in days past. Say, you know, if we go all the way back to the 1960s or 1970s, when everybody was getting their information from, say, Walter Cronkite, mm-hmm. whether you were a liberal or a conservative.
Mm-hmm. So do you think we've reached a point, and I'm not sure how in the world we would do this, where we have to let the American people know that we do have a fair system, that your vote indeed counts? Is there something we need to do so people will trust the system more?
I mean, I think that these kinds of fantastical claims like the ones that we've heard from Donald Trump have to be rejected and condemned. At the same time, I think it is really very important for us to address some of the underlying causes of this lack of confidence in government and in various institutions, foremost among them Congress, that many people across the political spectrum have. In my view, at least, it's this lack of faith in our governmental institutions and their ability to serve all the people that makes some members of the electorate, many members of the electorate, ideal targets for the kind of sensationalistic and false message that we've seen from Donald Trump regarding vote rigging. So I guess I'm of the view that we need to address some of those underlying causes, which include the causes of our expanding economic inequality, as well as, let's call it what it is, racism, which is a prominent role in American politics, as we have sometimes regrettably seen in the current election.
Yeah. What year is it? 2016?
Yeah. More than 50 years since the Voting Rights Act became law and brought the right to vote as a real matter to many people who had been denied it for so long, even though it was their constitutional right. More than 50 years later, we are still, in many ways, divided, and in some respects, more divided than we were back then.
Let's go to phone calls. We'll do so in just one moment. We're talking about whether or not there's any reason to be concerned, as Donald Trump has warned us about the elections being rigged in November, and we need observers, and why it is he says things like that, and how it contributes to this lack of faith we have not only in government but in our election process as well. Is it valid? Our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Our guest is Professor Daniel Takagi. He's a professor of constitutional law at Ohio State University. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go to your phone calls. We have many, and from the looks of things, a lot of you have concerns about the validity of elections. So let us start with Patrick in Beloit. Hi, Patrick.
Yes, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
By no means a Trump supporter, not necessarily a Hillary supporter this year as well. Talk about losing faith in the governor. Yeah, absolutely. I think that's pretty common in the United States right now. There's a lot of reason to be losing our faith when we're seeing our constitutional rights being taken away. Going to the election rigging, I just read something in the news this morning regarding the FBI releasing a statement saying that some foreign source tampered with state elections. So saying that this is so fantastical when it's happening right now and being released by the FBI, what's your response to that?
Yeah, it's a good area. Thanks, Patrick, for bringing that up.
So I do think the caller is right to note the lack of faith in our democracy. I've been watching with interest, as I'm sure many people have, these reports about hacking, at least in the view of some, by the Russian government and interfering with our elections. I do think these are really important things to pay attention to.
What in the world can we do about it?
Well, what can we do about... it depends on what the it is, right? So what can we do about hacking? This is beyond the scope of my expertise, and so I'll leave that to people who are technology experts. You know, to the extent that the concerns are with possible interference with the technology used either on electronic voting machines or on the systems used to tabulate votes, it's important that these be rigorously tested in advance of the elections, and that audits be conducted afterwards. And I guess I think the likelihood of some sort of massive attack being orchestrated in all of the thousands of electoral jurisdictions across the country without being detected strikes me as extremely low. But again, this is a question that's probably better addressed to technologists than to a lawyer like me. But one thing that is important to keep in mind here and might give people a little bit of security is that we actually don't have elections that are run at the national level or even for the most part at the state level, right? We have elections in every county in the country where the counties, and in some states, including Wisconsin, municipalities are actually running the elections and counting the votes and then sending those on to the state authority. And while there are a lot of disadvantages to this massive decentralization that is, you know, particular, if not unique, to the United States, one of the advantages is that to steal an election, you've got to attack a lot of different places.
Thanks, Patrick, so much for your call. Michelle in Toma, hi.
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 Yes, I guess I am more concerned about the strict voter ID laws, which prevent people from voting, and also on the state level with the redistricting. I think that, too, keeps people from being able to vote. And in the redistricting, it keeps certain representatives in, whether you want to get them voted out or not. Mm-hmm. And also, on the federal level, I'm not so concerned with the presidential elections being rigged. But when you can have big corporations give an anonymous amount of money to super PACs who then give to other campaigns, and then they send lobbyists up to convince Congress and senators to pass laws that benefit them and not the people. That's where I see the, you know, dishonesty in our election system. So I just wanted to comment on that.
All right, Michelle, thanks for calling. Professor Chikashi.
Oh, I think the caller is right on target with all three of her concerns. First of all, when it comes to people being able to participate, we should worry a lot about these new laws, including very strict voter ID laws, of which we've seen some in various states, including Wisconsin, as well as Texas and North Carolina in recent years. These can have a negative impact on turnout, especially among people who are already the least likely to vote, people of lower socioeconomic status in particular. And it's not just voter ID, it's also restrictions on who can register and on early voting that can have an impact on turnout. There are lawsuits, actually two of them going on in out of the state of Kansas right now, having to do with that state's restrictions on registration under a very, very right-wing Secretary of State there. Secondly, the issue of redistricting and gerrymandering, which the caller mentioned. She's quite right that the way districts are drawn can dictate the results. That's certainly true in your state, where there's actually a lawsuit going on right now that would challenge the alleged partisan gerrymandering of the state's districts in favor of the Republican Party. In my state of Ohio, which is about 50% Republican and 50% Democratic, 12 of the 16 districts are Republican districts. You can guess who drew those lines. And finally, the issue of money in politics, which the caller mentioned. We've seen a rapid growth in both the amount of money and the lack of disclosure with respect to at least some of that money. And I don't think there's any question that all this money coming into our political system has an impact on the policies that are getting made. And I do think that this is a major part of the reason why a lot of people feel that Congress doesn't speak for them anymore, and why a lot of people have become disenchanted with even feeling alienated from our political system. So, yeah, I think the caller is absolutely right on.
I was reading a piece today that also pointed attention at the primary system and said that redistricting, yes, we need to look at that, but maybe we need to look at this system where we get our candidates, and it's becoming increasingly polarized in a very few, 14.5% or something, people voting in the last midterm election. So you've got people who are adhering to one political philosophy or the other. It's a very narrow view. It doesn't represent a middle. And then you got a Congress that is functioning from that narrow view, not wanting to compromise, not wanting to lose an election. And so you've got, we don't care about these people. They don't care about us.
Yeah, I think it's a real concern, right? The people who turn out to vote in primaries and even more so in caucuses are a relatively narrow segment of the overall population. And they tend to be people who are at the polls, right? People who are more liberal on the Democratic side and more conservative on the Republican side. And so it ought not come as such a surprise from that perspective that you wind up with candidates, and I include, you know, Hillary Clinton as well as Donald Trump in this, who are not looked well upon by a substantial portion of the electorate. There was a poll that came out between the two conventions showing both of the presidential candidates with favorable, unfavorable ratings that were deep underwater. Now, Hillary Clinton's have improved significantly since then, but I do think that's one data point that shows you one of the problems. Now, reforming it is a difficult process, right? We have a long history of having primaries and caucuses, although there was a time not so long ago, back in the 1960s, where the party leadership exercised much more control over the nominating process than it does today. But I'm not sure how comfortable people would be with giving more power to the so-called party elites and less to the people who actually come out to vote in primaries and caucuses. Mm-hmm. So I agree that there's a concern there, but it's a hard problem to solve.
So part of the problem is us, that we have to vote.
I suppose, but it's easy to say that and much more difficult to accomplish it. I mean, you know, the reality is that at least as long as our primary and caucus system remains more or less as it is, we're not going to have a representative sample of the electorate coming out to vote in the primaries and caucuses. I mean, it's just not realistic. We are going to have a segment that tends to be representative of those at either end of the political spectrum, and that's not going to produce a nominee who is right in the middle, generally speaking.
Jeff in Superior, hi.
Hi, I'm amazed that you and the media continue to reinforce the bias that everyone accuses you of with this guest, for example.
What are you talking about, Jeff?
Yeah.
What's the bias here?
Let me support what I'm saying.
Okay.
There was intimidation by the Democratic Party in Cleveland during the last election when you had the Muslim Brotherhood showing up with weapons at a polling place. They had batons, whatever. So that's not a Republican intimidation tactic. Also, in Chicago, everybody knows the Chicago machine has voted for dead people. The Democratic Party there has voted dead people into, voted for dead people. But the concern this election is you got senior citizens who can't get to polls. You got handicapped people who maybe don't have the wherewithal or the capacity to vote. And you got people voting for Democratic candidates in their place because they have an absentee ballot or they take and they don't have to identify themselves because judges can ask for ID to present them with a ballot. The point is, more Republicans more Democrats oppose the Civil Rights Act than Republicans, and so it's really a Republican issue. And Republicans are trying to unite behind the idea of having fair elections, and the Democratic Party continues to push their...
Yeah, I'm not sure where you're getting a whole lot of this information, but Professor, you want to respond?
Yeah, I'm not sure either, but let me focus on a couple of things where there is at least a kernel of truth in what the caller said. The first has to do with the civil rights legislation that was enacted a half century ago, that the caller ended with, and... Yeah, it is quite true that at the time, back in the 1960s, the South was solidly Democratic. Today it's now, of course, mostly, although not quite as solidly, Republican. And the stalwart opponents of civil rights legislation were Southern Democrats. But, of course, the political parties have changed enormously since then, and so has the politics of voting and fair elections. So on the other side, I mean, I guess I agree with the basic concern that we should worry about voter intimidation regardless of who is responsible for
sure.
it, regardless of whether it's being used to intimidate people who are African American or Latino or people who are white, regardless of whether it disadvantages Republicans or Democrats. We should be concerned with fraud, but the point is that it's much less common than people generally believe. There have been occasional instances, which I think is what the caller's referring to, of people in nursing homes, for example, voting ballots on behalf of elderly people in their care with some question about whether they were really expressing the true intention. And occasionally, like in Florida a few years ago, an instance of fraud arising from this. But these kinds of cases are few and far between. And the idea that this sort of conduct could swing a presidential election is nothing short of crazy.
Gary writes on our Facebook page that, counter to what you said, Professor, hand-counted paper ballots only used in a few small New England towns. Gary would like to inform us that a hand-counted paper ballots is the norm in the townships of Ashland and Bayfield counties in northern Wisconsin.
Yeah.
He says, I expect this is the case in many small townships around the country.
Well, duly noted, I wasn't aware of that, but appreciate the clarification. But the point remains, yeah, you can count ballots by hand, where, as is the case in some municipalities in your state of Wisconsin, you've got a small number of people voting. But when you've got jurisdictions with tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, even millions of people in them, that's just not a practicable way of voting.
Our Facebook page, by the way, is the Kathleen Dunn Show, in case you want to leave a message there. If we don't get to all of them, some of you leave really long messages, and we can't read the whole thing. It's too long. But there are a lot of messages, and for those of you who love these political conversations and others, it's nice to read what listeners are thinking. All right, let us go next to Tony in Madison. Hello, Tony.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, Tony.
For the last several elections, including the last Wisconsin primary, I've been a poll observer in Racine, my hometown. And at one of the polling places on the north side, they were running out of ballots. And there was a computerized machine, a voting machine there, and I was talking to the poll worker there, and she says, nobody wants to use it, though. So there was a healthy skepticism, I guess, of the efficacy of that type of a machine. So I did want to comment on that. So people are still either superstitious, rightfully so, I mean, or whatever. They're hesitant to use those machines. If they were allowed the paper ballot, that they would, it seems that most people, at least in my experience, would go that route. And I also want to say I didn't see any armed Muslim Brotherhood people down in Racine Cole.
Good, comforting to know. Yeah, so people are used to what they're used to, right? And so in places where people have principally voted by paper, I suspect that's true. That's what people are going to be more comfortable with. But look, I vote in Columbus, Ohio, which is in Franklin County, and we've been using electronic voting machines for a long time, and I can tell you people are generally very comfortable and used to voting with the electronic machines here. And this isn't to diminish or deny some of the security concerns that have been raised in the past, but I think that, you know, if people actually have some experience voting on a particular technology, they become more accustomed to it.
Thanks, Tony, very much for your call. And we go to Larry in Stevens Point. Hi, Larry.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
By the way, I vote on paper, too, up here in Orange County. But,
okay.
The reason I called is I just wanted to point out that Mr. Trump is not the only one that's claimed that elections are rigged. If you'll remember, the Sanders voters or group were unhappy about the process, and I wonder if part of this problem is that we're dealing with younger voters who may not have ever had an adequate government or civics course. I remember that my daughter worked on Clinton's first campaign. She was in high school. She was cranked up. She was involved. I'm 75 years old. I had a good civics course ages ago, but I'm wondering if we're doing an adequate job of letting people know and educating them on how the process works.
I guess my own take on that is I think it's a very good thing if we can educate people about the political process and prepare them for the demands of being a citizen, not only voting, but participating in democracy, and this is a big part of what our educational system is for. On the other hand, I guess I'm a little skeptical of the idea that that's going to meaningfully address a lot of this great distrust in our governmental institutions that exists across the electorate. I do think that civics education is probably not going to solve that problem. Speaking specifically to this issue the caller raised about the Sanders voters, so this actually gets to something we were talking about earlier, which is this question of how populist, I suppose you would say, our system for selecting a nominee ought to be. There was concern on the part of many Sanders supporters throughout the process that the party seemed to prefer and seemed to be favoring Hillary Clinton. It later came out through these emails that there was some truth to these concerns, right? That indeed many people within the DNC did seem to want Hillary Clinton elected as the party's nominee. So, you know, on one hand, if you think this choice should be made entirely by the people and that the party shouldn't affect the result, that's problematic. On the other hand, if we take into consideration that those who show up to vote in primaries and caucuses are a small segment of the electorate, which, you know, on the Democratic side tilts left, maybe there's good reason for the party having some influence on who the nominee is, and that might include having some superdelegates, right? Party loyalists who are thinking of the best long-term interests of the party, at least in theory. So I don't mean to resolve this tension other than to suggest there is a real tension here in terms of how populist we want our nominating process to be, and there are costs and benefits on both sides. So I guess I wouldn't chalk up the dissatisfaction that many Sanders supporters have with the way that the Democratic nominating process went to ignorance of the political system. I think it may in some instances be exactly the reverse. They saw how the system worked and they didn't like it very much, rightly or wrongly.
And don't you think that indicates, because first of all, for the Democrats, you've got a huge number of young people who are Sanders supporters who really don't care that much about the Democratic Party. Sanders was a Democratic Socialist, too. Then you've got Republicans who've got Donald Trump, who's not really a Republican, and who knows what happens to the Republican Party after this election year. Who knows really what happens to the Democratic Party as well, because all of those frameworks that we've had are under serious scrutiny.
I think it's a great point. I mean, there is a really strong anti-establishment sentiment that was evident on both sides, on the Democratic side with respect to Sanders, on the Republican side with respect to not only Trump but also Ted Cruz, right, a candidate who is widely disliked, even reviled by many in the party establishment, but who essentially came in second to Donald Trump in the nominating contest. So I think both of the parties have some serious problems on their hands, and you know, we could be on the verge of the beginning of a major realignment of the parties. You know, the last realignment of the parties really began with the civil rights era that we talked about earlier, where Southern whites left the Democratic Party and became Republicans in droves in the succeeding years, and at the same time, people in the East, especially the Northeast, became increasingly Democratic. It could be that we see a major shift in the alignment of the parties in the years to come, and then we look back on 2016 as the year that that began.
More phone calls in just one moment. We're talking about rigged elections this hour of the program, and more broadly talking about our lack of confidence in government and in elections. It's not over 50%, but a lot of us don't have confidence in elections. 25% and a much larger number of people don't have much confidence in Congress. Why is that the case? And what do you make of a nominee from one of the major parties saying that, you know, the elections are going to be rigged before we voted? Our guest this hour is Professor Daniel Dakaji. He's an authority on the law of elections and democracy. Teaches courses on election law, constitutional law, federal courts, civil procedure, and legislation. And he is our guest for this hour talking about all of this. And we're welcoming phone calls. Just a real side note here, a note of humor perhaps. Oh, darn, did I lose my place on the... Oh, I lost my place. I'll go back to my Facebook page because there was a comment I wanted to read. I wanted to read it now, but KP, I lost it. I'll get back there and let you know. Stay with us. I'll tell you the funny comment in a moment. This is the Ideas Network. I'm sorry, Wisconsin Public Radio. On our Facebook page, I tell you this just for humor. No matter what your political persuasion, you got to admit Donald Trump has some strange hair. So on our Facebook page, there's a picture. It's the Kathleen Dunn Show, and Chris writes in, "I've been wondering for the longest time where that ledge of hair over his face come from. Look at the part. Thanks for the photo." So you'll get the answer to the most pressing political question of our time. All right, let's go. Larry, thanks for the call. Claire in Madison. Hi.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, Claire.
Thank you so much.
Sure.
The professor a few minutes ago briefly alluded to this, and this is something that we should be shouting from the rooftops about. This is really scary, Kathleen, and I hope your news department follows through on this too, by the way. Greg Palast from the Rolling Stone did an expose about this very nefarious thing going on by secretaries of state, and as your guest mentioned, it started in Kansas, but it's all over the United States. 7 million voters are being purged from voter registration logs all over the country, and that includes over 1 million in Wisconsin, which I'll get back to shortly. What they're doing is they're going through the names on voter registration lists, and when they find an ethnic name like Hernandez or Mohammed or whatever, they flag them, and then they send them a postcard, and the guise is that they're verifying their registration. Now, noteworthy, this is not going to every citizen who is registered, only certain ones. Now, that came out on Thursday, and then on Friday, I heard on Wisconsin Public Radio, 1 million postcards are going to be sent out next month. And the hitch is, and of course that's on taxpayer dollar, the hitch is if you don't return the postcard to verify who you are, where you live, you don't get to vote. How many people get a postcard mixed in with their junk mail, throw it in a corner on the desk, never look at it again, don't send it back? This is evil, nefarious, tricky stuff to try and get ethnic people to not vote.
Mm. Professor Takashi, are you familiar with this?
So I am familiar with the issue of purging, and the caller is absolutely right that this is a serious problem. Just to put it in perspective, as much attention as we pay to voter ID rules, what the social science research tends generally to show is that the election administration practice that has the biggest effect on whether someone votes or not are voter registration rules, and that would include the rules for purging or removing voters from the list. In fact, I'm co-counsel for a group of voters right now that's challenging Ohio's rules regarding purging voters from the list, where, similar to what the caller described, voters are removed from the list after a few years if they don't respond to a postcard. And we've got a case pending before the Court of Appeal here in Ohio right now. I'm not familiar with the specific story that the caller mentioned about Latino voters or voters with Hispanic last names being targeted, but if that were in fact going on, that would be a clear violation of the Voting Rights Act as well as the National Voter Registration Act, and someone could go into court and challenge that practice and get it stopped. So I don't know the specific facts about targeting Latino voters, but that is absolutely wrong if it is, in fact, going on and in violation of federal law.
Thank you, Claire. We'll be looking up that issue of the Rolling Stone. Let's go to Elaine in Colfax. Hi, Elaine.
Hi. I've worked at elections for at least 15 years, and I just want to say I think people should go through the process of becoming an election worker. It's there's so much detail, there's so much checks and balances built into the system. I think more people would have confidence about their vote. And as far as paper ballots, the election machines where I work, they actually type them on like a ticker tape. So they can pull, if they had to, they could pull the tape all apart and check each vote. It's not just a computer, it's actually typed. And it's kind of interesting. And I always explain to people that that's how it works if they're they're insecure, so they feel confident. But I think that most of the election workers that I've worked with are very conscientious, detail-oriented, and really care about the authenticity of the vote. So I think people should be much more appreciative of the efforts they make.
And there's a huge need for those poll workers in the city of Milwaukee.
Yeah.
Huge need.
Thanks for mentioning that. And I totally agree. People who volunteer to serve as poll workers on Election Day are much needed, and especially when they're attentive to detail and knowledgeable about the rules, they can do a great service. So it's wonderful that people do that, and if, you know, if people are listening in your audience and wondering, well, what can I do to make sure that our election is well run this time around, consider volunteering to be a poll worker. That's a great thing that people
do. Thanks, Celine, so much for the call. Quick call from Jimmy in Valley Junction. Hi.
Good afternoon. Yeah, I just want to point out that there's a comment about Democrats trying to suppress the votes, but I think you'll find that a lot of these judges that found that these voter ID laws unconstitutional were appointed by Republican presidents. And I'll take my comments off the air.
All right, we have about 30 seconds, Professor.
That has sometimes been the case, right, that judges appointed by Republicans have found voter ID or other barriers to participation to be unconstitutional or otherwise in violation of the law. And, you know, I know there are a lot of people who have reservations about lawsuits regarding the voting process, but the right to vote is a fundamental constitutional right, one that is essential if all of us are going to have an equal voice and be indeed equal citizens in our democracy. And the courts may not be perfect, but they're more independent than, say, an elected secretary of state, much less a state legislature. So it's a very important thing.
And we have to hold, we have to stop.
Oversight and protect the right to vote.
Thank you so much for being with us. I hope you'll join us again. Thank you.
Thank you.
Professor Daniel Takagi, and we thank him for being with us, professor of constitutional law at Ohio State. Thanks to Marika Saval for producing this hour, KP Whaley for on-air production here in Milwaukee. Tomorrow, John Dickerson is joining us, moderator of CBS's Face the Nation. Whistle Stop is the name of his book. He'll be here first hour. Teachers' Salaries, hour two of our program.